Before we begin today's show, I have some important news to share with you. Premier Insight's financial year ends on June the 30th, and it's vital we close a final funding gap of $94,000 by that date. The great news is generous friends of the ministry have offered a new $5,000 matching grant, which will double your gift today up to that amount. That's why I wanted to take just a moment before we get into today's podcast to ask for your help. If you would, please take a moment today to give your best gift at premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. Thank you for understanding how important your gift is today and for giving generously. And now it's time for today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show. I am delighted to be joined today by Jim Stockton, Emeritus Lecturer in Philosophy at Boise State University in Idaho. He's recently written a very exciting new book, The Oxford University Socratic Club, 1942 to 1972, A Life. What you're about to hear is Jim's workshop from the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. The title of Jim's workshop was Research Opportunities and the Oxford University Socratic Club, 1942 to 1972.
On the back table, I think everyone has figured that out, are handouts in order. And I will be using them to explain the research opportunities that the Oxford University Socratic Club has to offer. Just to make sure everyone's on board, the Socratic Club met regularly from 1942 all the way up to 1972, and it started to taper off in 69 in 1970. Lewis was president of the Socratic Club from 42 through 54, and then he went, of course, to Cambridge. Lewis went to quite a few of the meetings, but not all of them. There are other little myths out there that my book will approach, some that I didn't bother with, but are kind of interesting nonetheless. But the book itself, to plug it, does a rather good job of covering Lewis's participation, but it's mostly about the history of the club, and I try to make sure that there's a broad representation of different people. It rather came down to those who were interested in theology and those who were interested in what would become analytical philosophy in the 20th century, better known back then as Oxford Linguistical Philosophy. The primary source for the club are the minutes. There are 10 folders in Oxford, most of them coming from the Bold, and the Bod, excuse me, and one minutes book, which covers the first 3.5 years at the Wade. They're both referred to as minutes book number one because Hooper picked up this minutes book in the 1970s, and he didn't know that this book existed. Stella Allwinkel had it at the time. He enumerated it as the first book, and in Oxford's Bonnie Fider, which is his lengthy work from C.S. Lewis at the breakfast table, he says that there are no minutes until this book right here occurs. I refer to it as the second minutes book. What, in order to access or, you know, fully understand what the minutes were up to, you should have this handout right here. And what this is it's an I've alphabetized all of the speakers of the club and listed their papers or their participation that is given to us by not only the Wade Center's notes, which is the second handout right here, but also other material that I've been able to find. Now, to see how this works, this handout right here, and I'll explain it as I take you through it, is that below this are the first six lines that Lewis was the scheduled lead speaker or offered a reply to another lead speaker. And here's how to use these two handouts. The entries that have a name followed by a title and date indicate that the person named is the lead speaker of the work presented. For example, the fourth entry under Lewis's name, anthropomorphism, indicates Lewis was the lead speaker and anthropomorphism was the paper or lecture he presented to the club. He never published this paper, by the way. Hooper knew about it, didn't quite know where to find it until, of course, he bumped into it until this became public in 1991. I should say that the Wade acquired this after Stella died in 1989 or 90, and this was a part of the estate that they purchased in 1991. The next way that this works is these listings don't state who gave the reply. To find out who offered the reply to a lead speaker's paper or talk, you refer to the Wade Center right here. They will tell you if there is a reply. For many of these meetings, there wasn't a designated speaker offering the reply. Now, as far as Lewis studies are concerned, this is important because the minutes, not only these two minutes books, but several other folders afterwards, talk about Lewis standing up and offering the reply. And then he saw that as his, you know, role as president. They had someone that was booked to speak, but they hadn't found anyone who wanted to start the conversation. Farrar also, Austin Farrar, the philosophical theologian and a good friend of Lewis, I believe they became friends at the Socratic Club, he too would step in and offer the reply. Often they just, you know, got the discussion going and stood back and let the speaker offer their own answers and keep the conversation flowing. That's what the minutes indicate. But there are many other times where Lewis takes the speaker on, typically in a very polite way. There's a bit of a myth out there that Lewis could get rather feisty and offer a strong rebuttal, especially if he felt it was leaning towards agnosticism and atheism. We only have a few examples of that. However, we do not have complete minutes of all of the meetings. I believe there are other minutes out there. I just haven't been able to find them. We don't have anything from 1961 to 1972 when it comes to the minutes, and I believe there are minutes books out there for that as well. Going back to this handout again, the entries that show the alphabetized name, number two, followed by another name in parentheses, indicate that the first person listed is replying to the person and the paper in parentheses. And the first entry with Lewis's name typed out, W.B. Merchant, I don't know who he is. If you know who W.B. Merchant is, I would love to find out. And this is a wonderful example, and it's in the Socratic Digest. And you can buy a copy of the Socratic Digest that Joel Heck has out there in print. It works quite well. He did do some small edits to the text, and he explains that in the introduction. And I just want to say Joel Heck was the guy I kept going back to time and time again when I was starting my research on the Socratic Club, and his work, and especially his website, if you haven't seen it, is a wonderful contribution to Lewis studies. But going back here to the second point, Merchant's name in parentheses tells us that he presented a paper or talk on skepticism and faith, and that C.S. Lewis gave the reply, and it is a feisty one. So if you're looking for Lewis, you know, the debater, the, you know, counter-argument, that's as good a start as any. This is taken from the bottom part here where it starts with Lewis from the first handout, the alphabetized work, and you can see how it works. And it's rather easy to follow. If you see a name within the listing that I have here, and you're interested to know whether or not I have minutes of that particular meeting and speaker, just go ahead and email me. I hear from people often. I'm more than happy to share with you the minutes that I have on file. I believe that I have pictures of all the minutes that are archived either in Oxford or at the Wait. I also believe that those are the only two places that have Socratic Club minutes. But I wouldn't be surprised to find out that I'm wrong about that, because every so often, new archival material, unfortunately not minutes, but other materials pop up, and that's always a lot of fun. Here is just half a page of 5 pages that the secretary took on Lewis speaking on the resurrection. When Lewis spoke, he often took the entire meeting time up, and he was very popular. We have the record of meetings going anywhere from 70 to over 200 when Lewis was on the billing, either speaker or reply, but especially so when he was the speaker. This gives you an idea of what I call full, robust minutes. We fortunately have quite a few. About a third of the minutes are robust and lengthy, especially in the earlier years. The other larger category is half a page to a page. But unfortunately, as you see here, in the 50s, you start seeing the secretaries take much briefer minutes. And even over here on this screen, and I believe I have a handout to this, or did I offer a handout on this? I might not have. But over here on the right-hand side, you get brevity at its fullest. The reason this occurred around 51, 52 is by then we're a philosophy club. And it's more or less traditional. If you read the Aristotelian minutes, if you read the Joette Society minutes, this is how it's done in philosophy. Also, I think that the students at this time, especially so the secretaries, wanted to listen to the talks and engage in the discussion. And but there are other minutes going forward that offer a little bit more. The other material, next slide, yeah, that we have that helps us know what occurred are the Socratic Club flyers. And here are two examples that I like to show. And this one is from Hillary Term of 46. And you probably recognize some of these names. But these are also some of the more exciting meetings that occurred. We have McKinnon and Falk. They went back and forth on religion and morality. You have the Honor Eleanor Plummer here. She was in charge of, I forget the name of the acronym of the organization, but it was the collective organization for the Allies to help the defeated countries in particular, but also the French and the other countries that were destroyed within the war get back up on their feet. And they, of course, worked with the United States quite closely and were engaged in the Berlin airlift and other concerns throughout the 40s and 50s. Now, over here, what we have are the minutes of some of the more popular people. You see Sherwood Taylor here. He wrote books that were used in preparatory school or what we call high school on the introduction to science. He was very popular. And we also have up there, we could see Mescal. He's joining the crowd. Eric Mescal was a very important philosophical theologian. He participated in 10 meetings. He was a passing acquaintance and friend of C.S. Lewis, and he is the first person to write about the Anscombe-Lewis debate in his book in 1954. There was very little written about that debate until the 1970s, and I just give you a little bit of a story about it. Humphrey Carpenter came out with his work, The Inklings, and if you've read it before, he's not very charitable to Lewis. Matter of fact, he seems to have a little hostility against Lewis, and he's the one who put it out there first that Lewis was completely shattered by Anscombe's critique, and here are the reasons why. Well, out comes Hooper, and especially so in Oxford's Bonnie Fighter a couple years later, and says that Carpenter's wrong, it's a myth, he didn't really have that big of an issue. And a matter of fact, I think Lewis won the debate. Now, Hooper is the only major critic, to my knowledge, who has made the claim that he won. Everyone else either avoids the topic of who won or lost, or they simply point out Lewis lost the debate. That's what, and it was a bit concerning to him, but it wasn't a traumatic experience. I agree with that view. Lewis, he took a couple hard hits in his career, and it didn't knock him down. And so I think that's important to keep in mind. You can see that we have Burnell right there with the progress, without religion. Some of these debates, they're getting over to the Union Hall. They're becoming much larger. Earlier on, back in 44, philosopher of science, Jode, shows up, and him and Lewis have a famous debate on basically agnosticism and science and evolutionary theory. Lewis doesn't say a lot, but Jode does, which was his habit. And I cover that one rather well.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
I just wanted to quickly remind you that Premier Insight has been offered a new $5,000 matching grant that will double your gift today up to that amount. And right now, that's an incredible blessing, as there is a final funding gap of $94,000 that must be closed before the end of our financial year on June the 30th. This show depends fully on the generosity of friends like you. So I'm asking you to please give your very best gift right now to close this gap, knowing your gift will be doubled. You can give now at premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. Thank you.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation.
One of the reasons I covered that debate well in my book is because Joel Heck has done a very good job in an article he published a while back arguing that Lewis's friendship with Jode led to Jode's conversion in the early 50s, right before he died of cancer. And we know there was a conversion because Jode wrote a book about it and called The Recovery of Belief. And I know that I follow Joel Heck's argument closely. He says a lot of things that are on point and I agree with, but I'm a little hesitant to say that Lewis was the primary player in Jode's return to the Anglican Church. I think it had more to do with Jode facing cancer and knowing that he was going to pass on. And what a lot of people don't know about British culture is they have what is sometimes called Anglican atheism. And the philosopher Mary Warnock, she referred to herself as an Anglican atheist, and she was a member of the House of Lords. And what people who take that title or that association with are trying to say is I support the traditions of the Anglican Church, even though I don't believe in God. And inside a joke amongst them, especially in the 50s and 60s, they were more regular churchgoers than those that were very proud of their Anglican identity. And so we have these as a means of telling us what occurred at the meetings. And these come from the Wade Center. I have quite a few in the 50s and the 60s from the Bods collection. And I just a while back, I had a bunch of material sent to me by a collection in Northwest Illinois. And it was Iris's Murdoch's collection of not only flyers, but also term cards. And I haven't really gone through it well enough, but I'll be sharing that here in the near future, more than likely in an article, or I'll just send it to somebody and have them post it out there. I'm waiting till I get the book published, make sure there's no copyright issues to play through, and then I'm going to let these files fly, so to speak. And I'm working with the Wade Center on that, so I'm hoping in 3 or 4 years the Wade Center will have my photographs on file and they'll be accessible. Now, here we have 1956, and the Socratic Club meeting for Trinity Term. For those of you who aren't familiar with contemporary philosophy, Alistair McIntyre, who gave a talk on miracles, and Bernard Williams, who offered the reply, these are two of the most famous philosophers of the 20th century. I'm in the Wade. I'm going through the materials for my very first time, and I see that they have papers that were given to Stella to review, and one of the papers is Miracles by Alistair McIntyre. I knew some people who were in the International Society for McIntyrean Inquiry. I got a hold of them. They said, oh, we really want to see this. And they say, here's McIntyre's email address. He's in his mid-90s now and doesn't answer email or take interviews anymore. Back then, he was in his 80s. And I email him, said, this is what I found. And he emails back and goes, I forgot I wrote that. Send me a copy. And we when I got back from, I was fortunate enough to have taken 3 trips to Oxford, 3 weeks each. My department was very supportive of this project. And how am I doing on time? I got enough time. And when I did this, I took it to the department and I told them, I said, I'm starting to do some investigation into the Socratic Club. And it all started with the students asked me to teach a course on C.S. Lewis and philosophy in 2008. And I would like to go to Oxford. And they go, well, you know, it's not as though you're doing David Lewis. David Lewis is one of the most famous metaphysicians of the 20th century. We'd be good with H.D. Lewis, who was a contemporary of C.S. Lewis, or C.I. Lewis, which was also a contemporary and a philosopher. And I said, well, wait a minute, look at this, what I have here. They looked at it and they said, this is what we read in grad school. Then they looked at it some more, and another one of my colleagues said, you know, this is what I teach. And, you know, they go, wow, they didn't know that there were so many philosophers involved in this club. Like many in philosophy, they just assumed it was C.S. Lewis and his friends. And they helped fund my first trip as well as my third trip to Oxford. I was also given assistance, a grant by the Wade Center. And that was basically Chris Mitchell. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for Chris Mitchell. I didn't know what to do with this material when I found it in 2008, other than to share it when I gave my lecture on the Lewis Anscombe debate. And so we went to Lille, France, to a conference, a C.S. Lewis conference on Lewis and Friends. And Chris was one of the plenary speakers, and I stalked him. And we found them in a bar, Kathy and I did, and I told them what I wanted to do. And when I explained to Chris that my work would be just as much, if not more, about the philosophers involved in the club than Lewis and his friends and other people who were more interested in theology, he got really excited, and he said, we need that. And he said, let me help you get started. And they did. I was given a $1,000 grant to travel to Oxford with, which at that time was very helpful. And I had the full support and still have the full support today of the Wade Center, which I truly appreciate. He was a wonderful man. If you never met him, you just ask anyone who knew him better than I did, and they'll tell you just how sweet and kind he was. Now, on these two particular ones up here, back to miracles, this was by no means the only post-1948 paper on miracles. They had at least 15 more papers on miracles following the Lewis Anscombe debate. I haven't transcribed it yet. But Stella Allwinkle wrote a paper in reply to Anscombe's reply to Lewis to take it on. And you're going, okay, that's sweet. And I'm going, hold on a moment. Between the two, Allwinkle was the better educated philosopher. When the club came to her, and the reason the club came to her and asked for additional instruction was a lot of these students were taking the very popular PPE, and that's philosophy, political science, and economics. And they had to prepare for their philosophy exams, which included what we call today formal or symbolic logic, which is basically linguistical math. And they needed that instruction to get good, to get high marks on their finals. And that was what much of the debate about was occurring in 1948 or so, is what should we be, you know, helping the students with. And so she went to Gilbert Ryle, another famous philosopher, and she studied logic with Ryle and several other people. And she also was quick to pick up on what we now refer to as 20th century analytical philosophy. So because of Stella, less so because of Lewis, he probably just said, well, you do whatever you think's best, the club became more involved with these type of arguments. And I will process that Allwinkle paper one of these days, but I'm taking a year off after spending 2 years of writing this book and basically putting my family through hell. So I owe him that. Here we have another flyer, and you can see here we're up to 1959 with Wittgenstein and Aquinas, and we have two very famous philosophers, Anthony Kinney, who was a priest at one time, then stepped down to become to join the secular world, and was one of the best writers of 20th century philosophy. He wrote quite a few books on philosophy and the history of philosophy for the public. They sold very well, widely used. They knighted him for it. So it's Sir Kenny. And here we have Owen. And Owen was one of those old, hard-drinking, it was best if you were a young woman to take a friend with you when you went to Owen's office and or rooms. Quite the reputation, but, you know, really one of those, you know, in an odd way, colorful characters of Oxford. And he was very well versed in the ancients in particular. So, and up here, you might recognize the name of John Searle, another famous American philosopher who delivered a paper as well. But the point I want to make more so off of this one is you can see this as an additional meeting. By the late 1950s, the club has met on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, as well as on Monday. If you read the Lewis biographies, and they typically have two, maybe two and a half pages on the club, with almost all of it being about the Anscombe-Lewis debate, you might bump into someone saying the meetings were always held on Monday at Somerville College, which is one of the women's colleges. They were all over the map. And all sorts of different rooms that they used to hold the meetings in. And they often had, in the 50s, two meetings a week. And the idea with this special meeting is it was for the graduate students to deliver papers that they were getting ready to take to the Joette Society, which was the softer route, or the Aristotelian Society, which is where it was often determined if you were going to be brought on to faculty at Oxford, if you were in philosophy. So it was it had an important function, and it also dispels the myth that after Lewis died, this is something Hooper says, so that's the source, and you got to remember, Walter Hooper loved Lewis, and you can feel that when you read his work. So I think about Hooper as a young man, young biographer, writing about his hero, and I give him a pass all the way. But he says right after Lewis left, the club just plummeted. And no, actually, the club went the other direction. It's just it was a philosophy club by then. There was very little going on, although it did a lot of philosophy of religion. Here's the term card, and you can see that that mulled wine will be served. It's another reason that they had these meetings just for graduate students. Although the undergraduates could sneak in, and they had their own meetings, and it's my understanding that there was beer sometimes for the undergraduate meetings. Over here, this is, again, the same term card. These are all of the college representatives. And this holds all the way to 1969. If you have this many college representatives in your club, you're meeting twice a week, and people are using it as a means of tutorial, then I think it's fair to say that you're very active. And that's part of my evidence to back up that claim. The next one. Yeah. Here's one of the later cards. This is 1969 or 68. I can't read it up there. I'm going by memory. And you can see there's a decline. In 1968, 1969, students start protesting against the war of Vietnam, civil rights, women's rights, same things occurring in America. But for Oxford students, and I didn't know this until I started doing research on the club, they were restricted as undergraduates. There were rules in effect that restricted the students' movements, how late they can be out at night, whether or not they can be without a chaperone. This was important, especially for the women students. Going all the way back to when the club first started with three informal meetings at Somerville College, Albwinkle talking to the women. At the second meeting, the first question they asked her, can we bring our boyfriends to the next meeting? The Socratic during 1942, 43 in particular, was a venue that both the young women and the young men, many of them in the service, could go to and attend together. And I mean, of course, by which they can have some social interaction. And who's better if your mom's worried about you going to a club where there might be young men from Oxford and those rascally American flyboys showing up all over the place? You know, you just say, well, I am with Pastor Allwinkle. Pretty good. So I always appreciated that. But you see the decline here and these rules and restrictions they had in effect. That's the students, they unified against that, and that's the beginning at the end of not only the Socratic Club, but many of the other clubs at Oxford and Cambridge that had been a means for folk to get out and mingle with one another on topics they enjoyed. And so the club itself, pretty much, I have another slide there, I believe. Yeah. Okay. And these are the last two. You can see that they have just three meetings right here when we get to 72. And there's three flyers similar to this. And that's the very last meeting I know of. Now, besides going through, I think it's the main means here, the alphabetized list, comparing it to the Wade Center, and then writing me about someone or a topic you're interested in. The other research opportunities are mostly biographical. And if you go through the list of the biographical, I mean, the alphabetized listing of the meetings and the dates, you'll see a lot of people who are familiar in Lewis studies. And if you're interested in them, to maybe, you know, have an additional paragraph or a few lines in a paper about Austin Farr, Eric Mescal, Lawrence Grinston, all friends of Lewis, just, you know, go ahead, get a hold of me, and I'll help you as best I can. Thank you for coming and listening to my pet project. I appreciate it very much.
That was Jim Stockton's workshop, Research Opportunities and the Oxford University Socratic Club, 1942 to 1972, which was given at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference held at George Fox University. Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos, and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources, and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.